Committee on Environmental and Natural Resources be in order. And it's still. Today is Tuesday, January 11th, 2011. Welcome, everybody. A lot of familiar faces sitting out in the crowd that we'll be dealing with. Senators, take a look around. You're going to see them an awful lot when you see them back and forth in the halls representing their constituents and their businesses and whatnot. Feel free at any given time to use them for resources. They truly are professionals, and they know what they're doing. They know the bills in and out. Today is going to be somewhat of a relaxed day, if you will. It's going to be an informational day. I know we've got a lot of new members. We're going to start out with introductions. And I think maybe some of you may have not even met each other yet. So we're going to do some short introductions and go around the table here. And we're going to introduce the staff. And from there, we're going to go forth with the schedule that says Deputy Commissioner or Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer from the DNR will be here for an overview. His department heads will be here and available for you to ask questions if you have any concerns or anything, certainly this will be the time. Now, this is going to be kind of a fast overview. As far as bills, I don't see any bills coming before the committee for a short period of time here yet, until we get a little more organized and get a little more information. But feel free, my door. I think you need to understand that my door is always open. I met today with the minority side over at the state office building. I had a good conversation over there, and I think we're gonna hit the road running here, and we've got a lot of work to do, a lot of good work, a lot of issues, environmental issues that are near and dear to everybody, and there isn't anybody sitting at this table or in the crowd that doesn't care about the environment, and that's why we're all here. So, with that, I'm going to go ahead and open it up here. We'll start out with staff. Mike Carbo, committee administrator. Stand up so everybody can see you. Ed Werner from research. Ed's a familiar face. Been around here for, I think he said 60 years. I'm not sure. 27 years.
21.
Yeah, both in the House and now over in the Senate. Becky Ellery, my legislative assistant, new face. And, of course, if you need anything at all, get a hold of either her or Mike, my committee administrator. Greg Knopf. Greg Knopf is not a new person around here. He's been with the legislature for a long time. We're very fortunate to have him still on board. Brings a wealth of knowledge and experience. And, again, use him as a resource if you have any questions about anything. History. I'm really going to make you sound old here, but if you got any history, in the 4 years that I've been on here, and as well as on the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, he's been a tremendous resource for us, and I'm sure he'll continue in that fashion. So looking forward to working with you, Greg. Dan Mueller, fiscal analyst. He's the numbers guy. He's going to give you a little report, I think, probably later on, due to the fact that we not only have policy, but, of course, we also have budget. So you're going to see an awful lot of Dan. Dan's been with the state for how long?
16 years.
Wow.
So you can see we've got a lot of knowledge here, so we can draw from that. Next would be Caroline.
Carlin.
I'm sorry. Carlin. I got to get ready here. I got to use Carlin's some familiar face. Been working with the in this area for how long?
This will be my fourth year.
This will be your fourth year. So welcome. And DFL Research, are they? Could you want to stand up, please, and introduce yourself?
Okay. I've been working with this area for a long time, too.
Good. Welcome. Okay. And with that, I think what we're going to do is we're going to start at the end of the table. Chief Harrington is here. I call him Chief because he just retired from the St. Paul Police Department. Minnesota someplace, I think it was.
Yeah.
There's a little confusion as to whether you're going to be with us any more than today or not. I guess you and I are, or I guess we're working with leadership as to a different assignment here, but he has been originally assigned to this committee. So if you'd start out by introducing yourself, and we'll go around the table.
I'm John Harrington. I'm the most junior senator in the state of Minnesota, as it turns out. I represent District 67, which is the far east side of St. Paul. I have a 33-year career as Senator Ingebrigtsen says. I was the chief of police for the city of St. Paul for most of that time, and I've also been on faculty from Metropolitan State and St. Mary's for about 25 years.
Good afternoon, Chairman and fellow members of the committee. I'm Gary Dames. I represent Senate District 21, which is Redwood County, Brown County, Lyon County, and part of Watonwan County. This is certainly a new experience for me. I have sat on some boards of soil and water and things like that as a county commissioner. Look forward to working with all of you folks and appreciate the opportunity to serve in the committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. And before Senator Carlson, Chuck Wieger. Senator Wieger is not here. He came and talked to me. There's a schedule conflict there between working on this committee as well as on K-12 committee. So we're in the process of working those things out. So that's where he's at right now. When he comes back in, we'll let him introduce himself. So, Senator, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Carlson, Senate District 4. Senate District 4 runs from the 371 corridor from Cass Lake all the way down to just south of Pequot Lakes, all the way west to Bemidji, and all the way east over to Deer River. Counties of Cass Lake, the entire county, and half of Hubbard County, half of Crow Wing County, a little bit of Beltrami, and a little bit of Itasca. Just thrilled to be on the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Saxog. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tom Saxog. I represent District 3, which starts up the northwest angle and works its way down through International Falls, Grand Rapids, Aiken, and takes the north half of Mille Lacs Lake. I come to find that I'm not the only insurance agent who sits at this table. I was an independent agent for 36 years. There's three other insurance agents here now, so we probably know as much about insurance as we do about natural resources.
We'll draw upon all that when we do.
All right, yeah. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Dan Hall. I represent Senate District 40, which is Burnsville, Bloomington, and a small part of Savage. My background has been more in ministry. And I've been a chaplain. I train and certify chaplains for police departments mostly, and been around the Capitol off and on in that capacity also.
Thank you. And Senator Hall drew the short straw and is going to be the vice chair of this committee. Thanks. Linda, Senator Higgins is not here yet, so Senator Gerlach.
Well, good afternoon. Senator Chris Gerlach from Apple Valley. I represent the central part of Dakota County, the cities of Apple Valley and Rosemount and parts of Burnsville. This is my starting now my 13th year in the legislature. Spent a few terms in the other body, and this is my 7th year here in the Senate. Most of my committees have been on commerce, capital investment, state and local government elections, but every term I always like to try on something new. Last term it was the Education Committee. This term the straw I drew was the Environment Committee. And so I've not served on this committee before, but I'm excited to learn all of the ins and outs of environment and natural resources under your tutelage, Mr. Chairman, and the rest of the committee members and a lot of the other folks that are participating. So thank you.
Thank you and welcome. Senator Higgins.
We're just saying who we are.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm Linda Higgins from North Minneapolis, and I'm the DFL lead for this committee this session. And I have been on the Environment Committee every year except the last 4 years. And so now I have a lot of catching up to do because a lot of things happened in the last 4 years. So happy to be with you all.
Senator?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm Paul Gazelka. I'm District 12, which is the Crow Wing County and Morrison County area. So the picture, Royalton all the way up to Nisswa, so it includes Brainerd and Little Falls, butts right up against your two territories. I'm actually thrilled that all of us are here. We are maybe some of the most important stewards of protecting the resources that we have. And, you know, one of Brainerd's slogans is it's got to be about the water, because we recognize that's some of the things that people really, really enjoy about our state. So great to be a part of it.
Thank you. Welcome. Senator Kilash.
I'm Senator Ken Kilash. I represent District 63, which includes part of Bloomington, Richfield, and Southwest Minneapolis. I represent the area at the confluence of the Mississippi and the Minnesota rivers, and so that's part of the environment. National Wildlife Refuge, the state's Fort Snelling Park, and also the National Mississippi River Park. So there's a lot of environmental concerns in the district, and I look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
My name is John Peterson. I'm a senator from St. Cloud, Senate District 15. We also represent Wake Park, Rockville, and St. Augusta, in addition to St. Cloud. I'm quite certain I'm the only concrete block manufacturer sitting at the table. That's what I do. I manufacture concrete block and operate a couple of gravel pits up in central Minnesota. Have about 75 employees. It gives you a little bit of an insight into what I do to make a living. And we have a very vital resource in St. Cloud in terms of the Mississippi River running through our district, and very concerned about the water quality in that particular tributary moving forward. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm State Senator Keith Langseth. I represent District 9 in northwestern Minnesota, some Moorhead, Detroit Lakes, and Breckenridge, that area. I've been in the Senate for 31 years. That was after I got out of the House. So.
Senator Langseth, and I have not a lot in common, but I come from the Red River Valley myself, so I'm sure he's had the distinct experience of filling a sandbag or two over the years, and I know he's worked tirelessly with the Red River Valley, and as it appears right now, we'll probably be looking at that again this spring, but yeah, so he's got a lot of experience with water coming his direction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good afternoon. I think Senator Kielash is probably sick of hearing from me because I think this is our third committee today together, so he knows all about me.
You guys know it. You know each other pretty well.
From representing Senate District 31, Winona, Houston, and Fillmore counties, my background is in business and accounting. Our family's in the scrap and recycling business that dates back to 1910. My two brothers and I are the fourth generation. And by these two large bodies of water, the Mississippi River and the Root River, are two very important pieces of the environment in my district. So I look forward to working together with all of you on this committee. Thank you.
Well, thank you all for those introductions. Going next on my little bit of a housekeeping agenda, you have something in your packet there. You have some policy in your packet about, you know, being respectfully on time, and I pledge to you that I will be doing that over the course of the next 5 months. And I guess I would expect everybody else to do that. And if you can't make it, you know, you have the reasons why you can't be here, please get a hold of the committee administrator so we can make record of that. We are going to be charged with both not only policy but also finances for the whole department here. So. Again, we're going to have to be on time. We're going to have to work quickly. We don't have as much, committee time. We do have the last committee of the day. However, I generally don't like to stay any longer than 10, 11 o'clock at night, so we'll be done pretty early pretty much all the time. But, no, those days we'll save until conference committee time and the end of the session. But I want to be respectful of everybody's time, so we'll just move forward with that, and hopefully we can stay to that. Second item on the agenda is an overview of the committee's jurisdiction. You think you have that in your packet as well. The Committee on Environmental Natural Resources has jurisdiction over all legislation relating to the environment or the state's natural resources. The committee also has jurisdiction over the legacy amendment. For more details, we're going to go right into Dan Mueller. I'm sorry, Greg Knopf is going to be first, so we'll have a little overview from Greg.
Mr. Chairman, you've got a couple of things. The one that you were just reading from is the general one for all Senate committees that will – it's the updated version of it, and it will be put on the web. What I wanted to do, though, was to talk a little bit from – I've got another handout that I put together. It's a four-page handout, and the top it says Environment and Natural Resources Statutes 2011 session. And what I was going to do is just briefly – I'll try to do this quickly. If anybody wants to stop me, but I will be going fast – to just kind of go through the statutes that this committee deals with. First one of the aquaculture laws, they're in Chapter 17, which is the Commissioner of Agriculture, but that is where they were located a number of years ago. 83A, State Geographic Features, that deals with the naming of features of the state. 84, the Department of Natural Resources, that includes Department of Administration, Scientific and Natural Areas, Wild Rice Management, Forest for the Futures, all the off-highway vehicle laws that are in there, Critical Habitat, Private Sector Matching Account, Native Prairie Bank, Conservation Corps, Minnesota. Chapter 84A, that's where you get the people, you'll hear the term CONCON lands, those are consolidated conservation lands. They're generally specially tax forfeited lands that were forfeited to the state in the 1920s and 30s. 84B is Voyageurs National Park. 84C is some general language and conservation easements. 84D is invasive species. Then we've got parks and recreation. You've got state parks, state trails, the Parks and Trails Fund, which is one of the constitutional funds the chairman mentioned. Then Minnesota Zoo under Chapter 85A, the Lake Superior Center Authority under 85B, outdoor recreation system that defines the various aspects of the outdoor recreation system in 86A, watercraft safety, watercraft and watercraft titling, Chapter 86B, shooting range protection, 87A, that also would be a judiciary issue. 88 is Division of Forestry, that's where your wildfire laws and burning permits and prohibitions. 89 is state forest tree planting and forest roads. 89A is Sustainable Forest Resources, that's the Forest Resources Council that has come up with the timber harvesting and forest management guidelines. 90 is the timberlands, that's the sales on state lands and timber trespass laws. 92 is state lands, that's mostly the procedures for sale of state trust lands, and it also has the prohibition on sales of state lands and meandered waters. One of the things that you'll see in this committee is that there'll be a lands bill usually every year, not that they pass every year or get signed every year, but there's usually a state lands bill that has sales. Some of them are for various reasons, but a big chunk of them are because they're overriding this prohibition on the sales on meandered waters. Those are basically sales of lakeshore lots. That prohibition has been in the state statute for a number of years, and so what this committee is asked to do is to, for specific circumstances, to override that state law and sell lands. And then we've got the mineral lands in Chapter 83. That's all the mining leases, mine land reclamation, and even the severed mineral interest statutes are there. Lands in state forests, that's the sale of surplus lands, the land exchange board, land exchange laws, then you get game and fish. 97A through 97C are considered the game and fish laws. 97A is the general statute that deals with all the definitions, the game and fish fund. Also, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which is constitutional, and the Sard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council are located within the game and fish chapter. Enforcement penalties, license and permits, possession and transportation of wild animals. 97B is basically all of the hunting laws of the state. 97C is all the fishing laws of the state. And then we get into the 103 chapters are considered the water law of the state. You get 103 is the water policy information, water planning and project implementation is in 103B. That's where you find the creation of the Board of Water and Soil Resources, water planning requirements, lake improvement districts, and both the Lake Minnetonka and White Bear Lake Conservation Districts have statutes within there. And then the Star Lakes and Rivers was a recent addition from a few years ago. 103C is all the Soil and Water Conservation District law. 103D, and Soil and Water Conservation, just for a little background, they are located throughout the state. Many of them follow county borders. They're the elected officials at the local level, generally charged with most of it is financial assistance to landowners and also other types of assistance. Watershed districts, that I think it's about a third of the state, and 103D are covered by actual watershed districts. They have levying authority and get involved in project planning and also implementation of local rules. 103 is drainage law. That's the drainage law of the state. That you, along with the Agricultural Committee, would work on any law changes in the drainage law. 103F is protection of water resources. You get floodplain management, shoreland management, wild and scenic rivers, Mississippi Headwaters Board, Minnesota River Board, soil erosion statutes are in there. The Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program is in there. That's basically the easements that the state acquires on agricultural land. Clean Water Partnership and the PCA is there. In Chapter 103G, we get waters of the state, public waters designation and use, the Wetland Conservation Act, permits for work affecting public waters, water appropriation permits, water level establishment and control, dam construction, maintenance, and then harvest and control of aquatic plants. Those are permits that are required from the DNR if you're going to take aquatic plants through a pesticide or mechanical control in the water. Groundwater protection is 103H. That's the protection of sensitive areas, health risk limits for certain contaminants in groundwater, and evaluation and detection of pollutants. 110A is rural water districts. 114C is environmental regulatory innovations. That was something during the during an earlier administration, and I'm not sure how much that's used today. 114D is the Clean Water Legacy Act. That guides the total maximum daily load implementation. Also, the Clean Water Council is stated. And then at the end of the chapter is the Clean Water Fund, the constitutional, again, one of the four constitutional funds that were established in the 2008, when the voters approved that constitutional amendment. 114E is the Uniform Environmental Covenant Act. That was actually just passed a few years ago, and it does guide on how environmental covenants should work in the state. 115 is the Water Pollution Control Sanitary Districts. That's basically the Pollution Control Agency's Water Pollution Control Act. It also has provisions on sanitary districts, and then that's also where you find the subsurface sewage treatment systems, including ISTS and other types of systems in there. 115A is the Waste Management Act. That's where you'll find the electronic device collection and recycling program, solid waste management, recycling requirements, solid waste fees that local governments can collect, the motor vehicle transfer fee, problem materials, organized collection. I'm just kind of summarizing. There's a lot more within these chapters, but I'm trying to highlight just some of the things that are there. And 115B is environmental response and liability. That's basically the fund, also is referred to as a super fund. It deals with response and liability. The harmful substance compensation program is in there, and also within that chapter is the closed landfill cleanup program, where the state has roughly, I think, 112 landfills that has taken over completely for the cleanup. Have been since 1994. 115C is the petroleum tank release cleanup chapter that deals with tank liability for spills from the tanks. It also includes funding to help pay for the cleanup of that, and then also the petroleum tank release compensation board is stated in there. 115D is the Toxic Pollution Prevention Act, and that's where pollution prevention fees are assessed on entities that emit pollutants into the state, toxic pollutants into the state, and then they're also specified there is the work on toxic pollution prevention plans and pollution prevention assistance program. 115E deals with the preparedness for discharge of oil and hazardous substance. 116 is the Pollution Control Agency, which, again, agency administration. Also air pollution and solid waste regulation, mercury contamination, chemicals of high concern, small business assistance, and feedlot regulation is within that chapter, which is another area where with the Ag Committee, the Agriculture Committee, this committee has jurisdiction over feedlot regulation changes. And then 116A is public water and sewer systems. 116B is environmental rights. That's where a person is authorized to go to court to challenge an environmental problem within the state. It's not used a lot, but there have been a few cases that have gone forward over the years. And 116C is the Environmental Quality Board. That's where you get into the board administration, and radioactive waste management is within that, and also genetically engineered organisms. 116D is environmental policy. That's where the environmental review statutes are, environmental impact statements, and environmental assessment worksheets. Those are specified through the EQB. The EQB has rules that are more extensive, but you'll find the general language for the environmental review in the state. 116F is the recycling of solid waste. Those are basically some older statutes that don't have much effect these days. 116G is critical areas. That's the only critical area in the state right now is the Mississippi River as it runs through the Twin Cities, and there was a bill in a few years ago to beef that up. 116P is Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund. That's, again, constitutional, the fund is, and that specifies the LCCMR, Legislative Citizen Commission of Minnesota Resources, and then they also deal with the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which is federal funding that comes to the state. I think most of it, as I understand it, comes from basically an assessment when there's offshore oil drilling in the country. 116Q was the Great Lakes Protection Fund. The state put up some money a number of years ago into the Great Lakes Protection Fund, and the state also receives money back from that. 129D, .17 is the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Again, that's the fourth of the constitutional funds that I've been talking about. 282 is the tax forfeited land sales. Again, that's another place where you'll see provisions in land sale bills that come into the legislature where because of either prohibitions on the sales or they want to make a direct sale to a certain party or to a local unit of government, you'll see bills come in on the tax forfeited lands. The Public Facilities Authority, that's where the Clean Water Revolving Loan Program is, and also wastewater grant programs. And in 473, there are some metropolitan environmental laws dealing with metropolitan parks, solid and hazardous waste, and landfill abatement. And I just wanted to give you a flavor of the extent of this committee's jurisdiction and the types of statutes that could come forward in this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Knopf. Any questions from the committee members? It's as all clear as can be. Understanding what our purview is now, a little bit of a flavor, as he said. There's an awful lot of responsibility that comes with this committee. No question about that. Do you have any? Are there any questions? Any members have any questions of Greg at this point? Okay. So we have another introduction to go through real quickly before we move on. Senator Wieger, if you would introduce yourself. We had everybody around the table introduce themselves, and maybe everybody knows you already, but if you would please. No.
Mr. Chair, my name is Chuck Wieger. Maplewood, North St. Paul, Oakdale is my district. I apologize for being late. We got double booked. Senator Harrington and I are also on education committee, so we will need to work out how we're going to resolve that.
Good. That's the higher pay grade than what you and I are at, so they're going to be taking care of that, I understand, right now. So thank you. Welcome. Welcome to the committee.
Thank
Even
you.
If it might be short-lived, whatever. Next, we've got a report from Carolyn. If you would give us a little idea as to...
Mr. Chair, I was just going to briefly go over the confirmations. It's on the back of the jurisdiction sheet that you have. And the confirmations are governor's appointments that are subject to the advice and consent of the Senate. And these particular boards and governor appointments would be under the jurisdiction of this committee. The appointments are referred to the committee by the president of the Senate. And if the appointments are not heard within 60 days after they're sent to this committee by the president, then the appointment is withdrawn from the committee and then placed on the confirmation calendar for the whole Senate to be considered before adjournment by the of the regular session. And the confirmations require the majority of the whole Senate approval. But for this committee in the past, the individuals usually just come in to kind of go over their qualifications and what they've submitted to the public disclosure forms, and then the committee will recommend or not recommend confirmation by the entire Senate. So, and these were the board members and the commissioners that for the particular committees under this jurisdiction and councils and agencies.
Good. And thank you for that. And members, on that same note, you'll have an opportunity to review the application forms of the new members that will be coming before the committee, and you'll have an opportunity to look at where they come from, what they do. It's a very thorough application process that will come before us, and you'll have an opportunity to question them before we do confirmation and move forward. So I don't know what we're going to be looking as far as schedule, but it'll be somewhere down the line here. Not probably the month of January, but we have a time frame that we'll have to do it within a certain amount of time. So I'll let you know. Stay tuned on that. Next on the agenda, this is under, was a report from Dan. Is that right? Dan Mueller? Fiscal analysis.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dan Mueller, the fiscal analyst for the committee. I also serve as a fiscal analyst on the Ag Committee and also the Commerce Committee. So I'll be talking to you sometimes. I'll be the one that handles, if any of you need fiscal notes for bills, and I'm the one who processes those and gets those started, and the one that will be handing out lots of spreadsheets as we move along. This is a simple one. There's a three-page handout here. Looks like this. printed on both sides. The first page is a four biennium history of general fund spending for the agencies in this area. The agencies are Pollution Control Agency, the DNR, the Met Council, Regional Parks, the Minnesota Conservation Corps, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, which we'll probably all be calling Bowser by the time we finish here, and the Minnesota Zoo. As any of you that have been watching this committee over other years, two areas that are not being tracked in this this committee this year is the Science Museum. That's over in state government. And then a portion of DNR, payment in lieu of taxes, PILT payments, is now being tracked over in the tax committee, along with their aids and credits. So that's a change from previous year's tracking in this committee, which makes the totals go down a little bit. But briefly, the general fund appropriations, again, each this covers four bienniums. The current biennium is fiscal year 2010 and 11. The last column is the base budget for the next biennium that we will be appropriating for. Pollution Control Agency, as you'll see in 2008 and 2009, had $53.5 million of general fund appropriations and then drops all the way down to 18.3 in the current biennium. Much of that is due to we had some one-time general fund money back in 2008 that we appropriated for clean water purposes before the constitutional amendment was approved. So the Pollution Control Agency had a big influx of one-time general fund dollars for water programs. And then their base budget for the 12 and 13 is $17 million. Again, this is just general fund. Next, we have the Department of Natural Resources. And this table shows some of their divisions. One note, there is no longer an ecological resources division that has been combined with the water division, the second line of the DNR. I'm sure they'll mention that when they go through their overview. And again, this does not show the PILT payments that we've historically tracked within the DNR's budget. And just to put that in perspective, that would have been about $43 million in the current biennium and then jumping up to about $53 million in the next biennium. So that money will not be in our base, and the tax committee will be dealing with that. Some of the amounts we'll be looking at, land and minerals, I'm just looking at the last column, about $5.9 million. Water and ecological resources, $33 million. Forest fire fighting, there's two different sets, two numbers that we check here. The amount we directly appropriate, which is 14.2, which is mostly for forest fighting prevention. And then there's an open appropriation that's the $26 million is just an estimate, and the state pays that based on whatever the cost is. So they have an open appropriation for their firefighting operations. Forest management is $30.2 million. Parks and trails, $40.9 million. Very little general fund money goes to fish and wildlife management anymore. That's mostly all covered. That division is mostly all pays for, is covered by the Game and Fish Fund. Enforcement, $4.4 million. The other open, the 15.7, that is mostly treaty payments, various treaty payments, and I think the DNR has some information on that.
Excuse me, that's the other open?
Yes, other open, the $15.7 million. Operations, $3 million. For a total of $174 million of just general fund dollars in DNR. Met Council Parks, $7.1 million. Minnesota Conservation Corps, $910,000. Bowser, again, you'll see there back in 2008 and 2009, they were up to $52.4 million of general fund, and now is down to about half of that. But they also received a lot of one-time money for clean water projects that now they get from the Clean Water Fund. So they're looking at about $27.9 million for the base budget, and then Minnesota Zoo is at $12.4 million. Total for the division is $239.9 million. And to put that in perspective, over the overall state budget, it's about 6% of the total state general fund budget. The next two pages are, again, looking at all the agencies again, but this counts all the funds that track through those agencies. So a unique thing about this funding division is we have a lot of different dedicated and special funds that fund the agencies in this area. So the next two pages, pages 2 and 3, cover the total spending for each of the agencies for all the funds. And then pages 4 and 5 have a very brief description of some of the different funds and where they come from and what the total spending is. I'll spend most the next, I'm going to skip over pages 2 and 3 for now, but just showing the total spending when you count all funds, including federal funds and the dedicated funds, this in this area it jumps up to about, you see on the bottom of page 3, about $1 billion of total spending. So a lot more money, you know, $239.9 million comes from the general fund. So less than a third of the money that we spend in this area comes from the general fund, and the rest comes from the dedicated and special funds.
Just quickly, just for not only my, but on page 1, when you talk about those open accounts, can you explain those a little bit, elaborate a little bit on that? I don't want to belabor on that, but explain what the forest firefighting open one, how long is that, when did that come about, and how did that come about, and when does it go away, or does it have to go away by action?
Mr. Chairman, the only way that would go away if there was no forest firefight. The state has an obligation in statute to cover the cost of whatever the cost of
right.
covering the forest fires up in the state. So we have an open appropriation. The difference from a direct appropriation in that we don't limit how much money they can spend on it as long as it's, you know, within certain.
You have to have the flexibility is what it is.
Right.
That's what open means. Okay, fine, thanks.
And there's only two areas in our budget that has open appropriation.
Right.
It's firefighting and then the treaty payments
right.
is the other one. So pages 4 and 5, again, are brief descriptions of the funds that you'll see in this area. I'll quickly go through those. The general fund, we all know about, that funds the general operations of the state. This budget covers less than 1% of the general fund. The environmental fund, that's the main funding source at the Pollution Control Agency. It's funded through water permit fees and the solid waste tax primarily. And within the PCA over the last couple of bienniums, they've been actually moving more and more of the funding out of the general fund and over to the environmental fund, and it's becoming a more self-funded agency through fees and such. The remediation fund is also a fund mostly used at the PCA, but also some gets transferred to the Department of Ag, DNR, DEED, and to the Department of Health. It's used for site cleanup costs when they cannot be fully recovered. Special revenue fund is mostly an internal fund within agencies and between agencies to cover various administrative costs and also where they collect some dedicated fees. And so there's separate accounts within the special revenue fund. Some agencies use it more than others. Mostly in this area, we have other funds to track dedicated fees. Like the next one, the Natural Resource Fund, which is used primarily by the DNR. It's got 20 different accounts, such as state park fees, all the fees paid for trails and boats, forestry, and some lottery revenues. All have separate accounts within the Natural Resources Fund. We also have the Game and Fish Fund, of course. Deposits from all the hunting and fishing licenses, the stamps, and some lottery revenue, and also some dedicated federal money. There's 13 different accounts, such as deer habitat, waterfowl habitat, that are all tied to some of the stamp purchases. That spends about $200 million for the biennium that comes through the Game and Fish Fund. The gift fund is a small fund that operates over all agencies when the state gets some dedicated money or a gift and wants to designate it for a specific purpose, we track that in a separate state fund. Federal money, of course, is where we track the state money or the federal money that's dedicated to certain projects, and that includes the stimulus money. The last page are the constitutionally dedicated funds. We have the four funds that come from the 3A's constitutional amendment that raised the sales tax. And we also have another, the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund, which is the first one listed here. And that is money that comes from the lottery. And we get recommendations from the LCCMR, and we usually see a separate appropriation bill for that. In 2010 and 11, there was spending in just this area of about $48 million, but some money goes to other agencies. The Outdoor Heritage Fund was $143 million in this area, $105 for the Clean Water Fund. Parks and Trails Fund, $64.7, and also another fund is a permanent school fund that is dedicated within the Constitution. The DNR manages a vast amount of permanent school lands. Most of the money earned by those lands and in the corpus of the fund goes to schools, but the DNR uses a little bit of the money to operate part of their operation. The last page here is mostly showing the total appropriations and estimated amount available from the dedicated funding, the separate funds. Now, this includes all agencies. For instance, the Clean Water Fund also makes appropriations to the Public Facilities Authority, Department of Ag, and some other agencies that are outside of this committee's general jurisdiction. But I just wanted to show how much was appropriated in the current biennium for each of the funds. $146.5 from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, $152.2 from the Clean Water, Parks and Trails $65.1 million, and the Arts and Cultural Heritage $93.2 million. Then the next column is approximately how much is available for this legislature to appropriate. Now, this is just based on revenue. There's no set number in law or anywhere that says exactly how much we have to or are limited to appropriate other than what the revenue that's coming in from the sales tax. So this is approximately how much revenue will be coming into these funds over the next biennium. $172 million each in the Outdoor Heritage Fund and Clean Water Fund. Parks and Trails, about $74 million. In the Arts and Cultural Heritage, $100 million. That one might actually be a little higher because they didn't leave themselves much of a fund balance in the current biennium, and maybe we'll have to do that this year. Lottery proceeds. Now, this is the total appropriations that come from recommendations from the LCCMR. Currently, they're appropriating about $51.1 million in 10 and 11, and then in 12 and 13, their current recommendations show about $50.6 million coming from the trust fund. So that's briefly an overview of the spending for all the agencies in this area and the dedicated constitutional amendments funds.
So a lot of different areas. Are there any questions from the committee on his report?
Mr. Chair, I have a question for Mr. Mueller. On the PILT payments, you say that they're now taken out of the DNR and moved over to the tax committee. The funds have been transferred over or are being operate or handled by the taxes, but the decision-making authority, has that been transferred also, or is that still through the DNR?
Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's hard to say where the decision-making authority within the legislature will reside, because for the agency, there's not really a decision to be made. Basically, under current law, it's all determined by the amount is determined by the DNR, and the checks are cut by the Commissioner of Revenue to the counties to pass through to other local units of government. How this is going to work now? I mean, this committee has had jurisdiction over the PILT laws in the past, and I don't know to what extent that's being transferred or whatever. But we do know that the financial part of it is being handled through the tax committee now. Beyond that, I can't tell you. I mean, there is a part of it's in the game and fish laws, and so I don't know whether they'll also extend their arms that far or not. I don't know.
Thank you.
Senator Kielash.
Yeah, I'm just a little bit confused on the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Is that under the jurisdiction of this committee or and all of the things that go into it? So, right? It's kind of, you didn't have it listed in the...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kielash, on pages 4 and 5, I didn't list them because that was counting where money is coming from in the current biennium for the agencies in our area, and right now none of the agencies in this area spend money on the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. But looking ahead to the next biennium, this division will be appropriating the money from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Thank you. The report, from the, you know, for those of you that are new, the last page, you're going to hear an awful lot about the Environmental Natural Resource dedicated funding and how those dollars are shifted. And the confusion, I think, is already been talked about here, but it does come through our commission, through our committee. However, each one of these groups, not each one of them, but the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the one that I sit on, Lasard Sams, comes a recommendation of spending, but the rest of them come in the form of bills to this committee, and we will be hearing all the bills on those dollars. So. With regards to pill payment, that's always an interesting and hot topic, County Commissioner, for sure. And you'll certainly hear a lot about that. We've had some discussions in our caucus about that going to be one of the not one of the priorities by any stretch, but it's certainly going to be talked about in Senator Ortman's committee. So that's always an issue with land acquisition. You're going to hear a lot about. You know, does the state of Minnesota have enough land? Don't they have enough land? So those kinds of things you're going to hear about. If you've got any questions, certainly get a hold of those of us that have been around for a while, and we can at least clue you in a little bit as to how that goes and how the system runs when it comes to acquisition versus fees and things like that. So, any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Senator Langside.
Mr. Chair, under the lottery trust fund, there's money coming in all the time, and then we're appropriating money. But isn't there a fairly large amount of money in the trust as well? If so, how much is in there?
That's a good question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Langside, I'll look it up here. This the amount that we appropriate is just 5.5% of the per year of the balance of the fund. Let me see. There is approximately after fiscal year 10, about $540 million in the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund.
Well, Mr. Chair, what I'm kind of wondering now is that there is money coming in all the time and there's money going out. Are we still building up that trust fund?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Is there any questions with the rest of the committee members with regards to that trust fund? No, that seems like an awful lot of money just sitting there, but that's what it was intended to do when the Constitution was passed. With regards to lottery, that fund actually builds, and we are authorized to spend 5.5%
per year
of those funds plus interest. So that's why that keeps building and keeps growing, and of course the expenditures keep growing with it. Senator Gazelko.
Mr. Chair, is there a point where it does build up enough? Do we have a number we reach where we don't keep doing that?
I would have to defer to a council on that. I'm not sure what the sunset is on that, if there was a time limit on that.
Mr. Chairman, there is a time limit on it. I'd have to look up. I think it's something like 2022, somewhere around there. It's going to sunset at some point. What happened the first time, it was but 40% of the net proceeds from the lottery get deposited into the trust fund. And during the first, I think at first it was just a 10-year window. Then in 1998, the legislature extended that. And I'm trying to remember the exact date. I might be getting confused with the 3A, so I don't want to say off the top of my head. But there is a sunset date when that will, and I think it's around 2020, but I don't remember the exact date. I'd have to look it up again.
Senator, if you'd like to follow up with that, Susan Thornton, I think, might even be in the crowd here from LCCMR. You may want to set up a time and have her come in and visit with you about that from LCCMR, the executive director. Senator Higgins. Oh, okay. Any other questions? If not, we'll move on for some information, an overview from the DNR. We'll call upon Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer, who is also a very familiar face, has been around here for how many years, Commissioner? We want to introduce yourself and tell the folks how long you've been working here in the DNR in your capacity.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the record. Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. I've been with the department for the past 7 years. Previous to that, I've been doing legislative relations and activities for the Office of Waste Management, Office of Environmental Assistance, which is now part of the Pollution Control Agency. And before that, I was actually started this illustrious career as a page and an intern and a committee clerk and a sergeant in the Senate office. So I've been around here since 1990, actually. So. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to be here in front of you today, and I want to thank your staff for doing most of my work and bringing you up to speed on all my issues. So if you have any questions, let us know. No, we have a lot of other stuff, but we did touch on a lot of good things. As grad Representative Mr. Knopf provided you with a reading list of all the statutes that you need to be familiar with as we go through the department and everything else. I encourage you to take a close look at those, but we'll talk more about that as we get through our presentation. First of all, I want to introduce to you, Mr. Chair and committee members, Deputy Commissioner David Schad.
Welcome, Mr. Schad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. And as you know, Tom Landwehr was asked to serve as a DNR commissioner by Governor Dayton. Tom would have liked to have been here today, but he's actually on a plane to northwestern Minnesota with, I think, Representative Fabian and Senator Stumpf and the governor to talk to some folks up there about some issues that the governor heard about during the campaign. So I think there is some time on Thursday for you to meet Commissioner Landwehr at your meeting on Thursday. But anyway, I wanted to just take a few minutes to introduce myself. I've been with the Department of Natural Resources for 30 years, most of that in the Fish and Wildlife Division. For the last 6 years, I've been the director of that Fish and Wildlife Division, and look forward to working with you now in my new capacity as Deputy Commissioner. Commissioner Landwehr hasn't had much of a chance to take a look at things and make too many decisions, but one decision that he was able to make was that Bob Meyer will continue to lead our legislative efforts here going forward. I think if you haven't met Bob, you will very soon. He knows everything there is to know about our work and knows how things get done here. And I think we're very, very well served by Bob and his work, and I know you'll enjoy working with him. You'll notice in the crowd today that we've got quite a number of DNR staff in attendance here. Hopefully this won't be a typical situation. One of the things that we are trying to do is try to be as efficient as possible with our time and with your time and trying to be very strategic about who we send to hearings. We want to make sure that the right folks are here to answer your questions and be available, but only those folks that are absolutely necessary. And so we thought that, today with this introduction, it would be a good time for you to put faces to names and get to know some of our senior leadership. But hopefully you won't see this many DNR faces in the crowd at every one of your meetings and hearings. That being said, we certainly want to make sure that you know that we're available to answer any questions or issues or ideas or concerns. I'm sure you've got probably a long list of issues that you've heard on the campaign trail or since you've taken office. regarding DNR business. We touch a lot of people's lives across the state, and as you get those, feel free to route them to Bob or myself or Commissioner Landwehr or any of the folks here you see here today, and we'll try to turn around an answer and get you the information you need as quickly as possible. So with that, I think I'll turn it back to Bob unless there's any questions for me, and he's got a kind of a high-level overview of the work of the department for you today.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. We look forward to working with you as well as the new commissioner moving forward. So any questions of the deputy? Thank you. Mr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do need to apologize. Our numbers, this the PILT shift that staff spoke of earlier, we were not aware of that. So our numbers as general funds still reflect those PILT appropriations that are reflected in the open or the general fund appropriations. So as you're looking at those, subtract about $40 million or so, and that's the PILT. Actually, PILT payments right now are $43.7 million for the 10-11 biennium. I think those are forecasted to go up to about $50 million, 12 and 13. It's based upon, the simple way to think of it is 3/4 of 1% of the appraised value of the land, and those lands are reappraised every 5 years, and we use the county recorder's data on the value of that land to do that estimation. So I'm excited to hear of that shift because it's always been a complicated thing for this committee and the department to deal with when we look at appropriations, and then you look at expenditures where there's a $40 or $50 million gap, so this will help us be able to track those dollars. The DNR is a complex organization, and one thing I can say with 100% certainty that it will touch every one of your constituents, every one of you folks at the table, some of your constituents, if not all of them, depending on where you live. We have an important mission to the state of Minnesota. We work with the citizens to conserve and manage the state's natural resources, provide outdoor recreational opportunities, and to provide for commercial uses of natural resources in a way that creates a sustainable quality of life. We look at this conservation mission as integrated resource management, and those three circles that just came in are very important for you to remember as we talk about the department and our budgets. Some say we have a complicated or conflicting mission statement. We look at them as completing or complementing each other in many ways. The outdoor recreation does impact economic development. You'll hear a lot about that from us and from others. And it also impacts natural resource protection. Likewise, the economic development section that we have or the duties and authorities we have really needs to be driven by the recreational components of a park system, of a trail system, of a hunting system, a wildlife watching system, water control, water quality, and also natural resources protection. These things, when we work in the middle where you see the DNR, we can stay in tune with our constituents. When we start getting outside of these circles too far to one direction is where we come into conflict, but we deal with that conflict both internally with you all and externally to make sure that people understand what we are doing and that we are representing the best interests of the state and the citizens and the environment that we so dearly love in this state. We're an integrated organization made up now of a few less divisions than we have been in the past. We've recently combined the Parks and Trails Division and just recently Ecological and Water Resources for our Ecological Resources Division and our Waters Division. You see we have the Enforcement, Parks and Trails, Lands and Minerals, Forestry, Fish and Wildlife, and the Ecological and Water Resources all working together to conserve the state's natural resources. We have many different goals, but this slide just highlights some of the high-level agency goals that we're working to accomplish, making sure that our natural lands and habitats are conserved and enhanced, the water resources and watersheds are conserved and enhanced, our fish and wildlife populations maintain and will be healthy and provide great fishing, hunting, and wildlife viewing opportunities, that we have a high-quality and diverse outdoor recreation system, that we provide for the sustainable economic use of our natural resources, and that we effectively and efficiently deliver services to meet our mission. One of the things that we're very proud of is our adaptive management strategy that we use dealing with managing or measuring our conservation results. We've developed a complex performance management system that helps us to improve accountability and results, to better connect our mission and goals to program and budgets, use performance indicators and targets to measure conservation results. And this, the diagram here kind of shows how that works. We're constantly planning, developing our budgets, measuring and adapting those budgets to deal with our missions and goals, our trends and strategic directions, our program objectives, and our performance measures and targets. Over the past 4 years, we've developed a complex document called Budgeting for Results, which, as you folks continue to talk about zero-based budgeting or performance-based budgeting, I think you'll be very happy to see this document, and hopefully we'll use that to deal with the challenges that lie ahead of us so you can understand exactly what you will be funding for the DNR and what we will be or will not be providing to the citizens of the state of Minnesota at a very detailed level. As I'm meeting with you one-on-one, we'll be reviewing this document and helping you become more familiar with it, because we feel it's a great decision-making tool to use to help us and help Minnesotans understand what we are providing for them through our budget. The DNR organization I just kind of talked about in the circle that's laid out here in this diagram, the commissioner's office and the seven divisions that are there. Operations supports includes our bureaus, the commissioner's office, and also our regional management structure and our regional offices that are located in Bemidji, Grand Rapids, New Ulm, and here in St. Paul. You can see this. It doesn't come up very well, but when we meet with you one-on-one, we're going to have maps of your Senate district that show all of the DNR entities that are in your area and adjoining areas if you're interested. And also we're going to talk about the number of stakeholders that are touched on a daily basis with the DNR, hunting and fishing licenses, snowmobiles, other recreational vehicles, park attendants, and things like that. We have a huge amount of customers throughout the state. This map, it shows where all these facilities are located. It's kind of cluttered, but I wanted to give people an understanding of our regional boundaries and also just the vastness of our locations throughout the area. Mr. Chairman, you asked us to talk a little bit about rulemaking authority, and not only does the DNR have a broad body of statutory authority in the books that we talk about here in this committee and in other committees, we also have an overlying administrative rulemaking authority as well. This lies at a general level where there are certain areas of statute, as you look at the chart, where we have broad rulemaking authority, such in the game and fish statutes. The commissioner has been given the authority to develop rules to support and substantiate the statutes that are in those chapters. But we also receive authority to make rules through legislation or through the direction that you all give us. These rules are carried forward through Chapter 14, which is called the Administrative Procedure Act, and it provides us the detail to really drill down into the complex interactions of a concept or a body of law that's passed into law to help implement that law. The rulemaking process provides for a more detailed citizen customer, if you want to call it, interface, with a lot of opportunities for public hearing, appeals, administrative law judge review, and ultimately signed into the rulemaking authority by the state or by the governor or by the time frame that it goes through. So we could spend a lot of time, and I think we will spend a lot of time talking about the Rulemaking Act or the APA, Chapter 14, how we deal with it on a specific case-by-case basis, and also the broad overarching rulemaking authorities that we have. Mr. Chair, I hope that helps answer some of those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner, and I would strongly encourage you to, when you make your individual visits to the Senate offices, that you talk about that. And Senators, please have your questions available and ready to go when it comes to rulemaking authority and things like that versus statutes. So just have those questions ready for him. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving forward, again, I need to apologize about this, and we will be rectifying these general fund numbers that are represented in this budget. But the FY 2010-11 DNR budget, all funds combined, was about $900 million for the department. 25%, or you could probably say 24% now, maybe, it was general fund. 22% from the Game and Fish Fund. About 18% from the Natural Resources Fund. The Outdoor Heritage funds that are appropriated to the department make up about 14%, but a large portion of these funds are passed through to other entities. We act as the fiscal agent for the state, passing through these dollars that are approved. Recommendations are made to you from various bodies, and then we take the laws that you pass in the appropriations that are in those laws and get that money out the door, making sure that it meets all the legal and statutory requirements that are there. You can see also here 6.3%, about 6% from special revenue funds, This represents our iron ore rents and royalties, timber sales on state-owned timberlands. It's a category where a bunch of different monies go into our cooperative agreements that we have, merchandise and consumables from state parks, the revenues from Douglas Lodge at Itasca State Park, and also private restricted donations. If a person in their will or makes a donation to us says, we want it to be used for this specific purpose, this is where those revenues would be deposited. You'll see the special revenue fund category carried through forestry, parks and trails, fish and wildlife. So when you see that, just remember what that's made up of. Federal funding, this changes up and down from year to year, but we do receive large amounts of federal funds to do a lot of different appropriations. Parks and Trails Fund, legacy funds, and the Clean Water Legacy Fund there on the other side of the trust fund percentage are dollars that are contained within the governor's budget and that the legislature makes appropriations upon based upon that. There are no advisory councils or commissions or committees such as the Outdoor Heritage Council, Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, or the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources making recommendations on that. On that note, Environment Trust Fund is the LCCMR recommendations that you folks will be acting on and hearing about, and then the Clean Water Legacy Fund I just talked about. By division, and this is where we'll be spending a lot of time as we talk about the DNR's budget, you can see the budgeted expenditures. And now this, again, this is going to include PILT payments. So it actually, no, won't include it. The other slide included PILT. This doesn't include PILT, and that's, I'm glad we're straightening that out. But fish and wildlife is about 24% of the overall budget. Parks and trails, close to 22%. Forestry, 19%. Operations support, about 9%. Lands and minerals, 7.5%. Enforcement, 7.3%. Ecological resources and waters, about 11%, roughly, kind of rounding on those dollars. But it's also important, members, to realize that each of these divisions have different levels of general fund. As staff spoke of earlier, fish and wildlife, for the most part, has no general fund left in it. Where our general fund relies is in parks and trails, forestry, enforcement, ecological resources, and waters. And as we are preparing a budget, we need to keep in mind as we reduce the general fund in, say, for example, the forestry division, that's going to have an economic effect in the industry and in the tax revenues that the state will receive from potential impacts that may occur from those dollars. So we need to not only come up with a responsible budget proposal that deals with a general fund reduction or wherever we're going to go, we also need to keep in mind that the side effects or the economic impacts that reductions might have, and we will work with you to make sure you understand those as we're making decisions or as you're all making decisions on budgetary solutions for the future. Mr. Chair, I know we're going to be not getting through this whole presentation today, but I'm going to do the best we can to expedite ourselves through this. What my plan was to bring up individual commission or division directors so you all can put a face with the name and have them run through a couple high-level slides, and we'll be circling up with you all. I'm in the process of getting one-on-one meetings set up, the beginning of many one-on-one meetings, I'm assuming, to go through this deep information in more detail. So with that, I'm going to bring up Steve Hirsch, our Director of Ecological and Water Resources Division, and I've asked them all to go as fast as possibly we can without speed speaking and making sure you guys can understand what we're saying. You're going to need to go one more over and get through this in a timely fashion. So, Mr. Chair, allow me to introduce Steve Hirsch, our Director of Ecological Resources and Waters Division.
Mr. Hirsch, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Steve Hirsch, DNR Ecological and Water Resources Director. The Division of Ecological and Water Resources, as was already been mentioned, is a new division that's integrating the two former divisions with a real emphasis on trying to emphasize collaboration with our partners and delivering the best possible science we can to influence better outcomes where we don't have direct regulatory authority or directly own the land. And our overarching goal is to try to achieve healthy watersheds throughout Minnesota. We have, as you can see, a number of different statutory authorities listed, threatened and endangered species, invasive species. The Portions of the outdoor recreation system we manage include scientific and natural areas and native prairie bank easements. We have a number of programs in the water area, water appropriation work in the better protected waters, dam safety, aquatic plant management program. And then we also have oversight of some of the land use programs like floodplain, shoreland, and wild and scenic rivers. As you can see, the budget's presented for the two former divisions because we're still operating in the current biennium when the appropriations were made separately to the two divisions. You could see we do utilize a variety of funding sources, including general fund and different natural resource funds like non-game water recreation account and invasive species account, also game and fish fund. In general, the water programs have tended to be more reliant on general fund, and that's had an impact over the last decade or so as general fund funds have decreased. Both of the programs from both divisions are also very reliant on federal funds for a number of different programs. Programs in the divisions are divided into three general areas: inventory analysis and monitoring, conservation assistance and regulation, and then ecosystem management and protection. The inventory analysis and monitoring is like its name and includes a county biological survey where we're systematically surveying all the counties in the state for rare features. The County Geologic Atlas, which I'll talk about a little bit on the last slide, surface and groundwater monitoring, stream habitat monitoring. And then the conservation assistance and regulation section is where our regulatory programs reside, the ones that I've mentioned most of them already. Also, this is the section where the environmental review program resides. We manage the environmental review program for the department in this division. And then finally, the ecosystem management and protection section has a natural heritage or a rare features program, scientific natural areas, invasive species, non-game wildlife programs, water and wildlife education, and wetland protection. The first slide on our outcomes has to do with aquatic invasive species. There's a graph there where you can see a number of water bodies infested with zebra mussels comparing states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. And you can see for a long time Minnesota was pretty flat in the number of waters that were infested. It was mainly border waters, Mississippi River, St. Croix River, and Lake Superior. But in recent years, as I'm sure you've all heard, they have started to jump to inland waters now. We now have 19 inland waters that are infested, so we're very concerned about that, and we're currently formulating a game plan that you'll be hearing more about on how to address that. And then you can see the other bar chart just shows how we've been able to increase watercraft inspections by about 60%. And this was due to increased funding for the program that really took hold in fiscal year 2009. And we currently have about $4 million in our budget for aquatic invasive species management, about $750,000 for terrestrial invasive species management. And the program increases that we've implemented these last couple years have been focused around more enforcement, more watercraft inspections, grants to local partners for management and prevention, and then also some field staff to help assist our partners. And then the last slide on priority outcomes is with the County Geological Atlas. And this is a systematic survey of the geology and hydrogeology of the state to help characterize our groundwater resources. It's very important information that's needed by local communities to help manage their water resources. We've tended to take our water resources in Minnesota for granted because they're very plentiful, but we're finding that we're having more and more conflicts and that we need to get a much better handle on our groundwater and surface water resources. That's it for the Equal Waters.
Thank you. Division. Any questions? Thank you very much for that report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to move into the Division of Enforcement, and as Colonel Conrad's coming up, I just want to say the department, first and foremost, Division of Forestry, firefighting we talked about, but also enforcement. Our primary mission, no matter what, is the protection of life, public property, and safety. When an issue does come up, such as a forest fire, it changes the department's work. We shift all of our resources that are needed to deal with those issues. And also, likewise, with our Division of Enforcement, we had six officers in the Wadena tornado disaster that occurred that were on the scene almost immediately, providing assistance and often relief so that those local firefighters and law enforcement officers could go deal with their own families and friends as well and try to take care of them. So we drop a lot of things to make sure the people of Minnesota are safe, and I don't know if Colonel Conrad would kind of highlight that as much as I do, but we really appreciate that. And one of the things that we have to understand is that those are funded out of general fund activities. So with that, I'll introduce to you Colonel Conrad.
Appreciate that. Welcome, Colonel, to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Jim Conrad, Director of Enforcement. Been with law enforcement for 33 years, 28 of them here with the Division of Natural Resources. Really happy to be here. The Enforcement Division provides natural resource law enforcement, recreational law enforcement, public safety, and also regulation of commercial activities involving natural resources, and provides safety training and education. If you go to the next slide, our statutory authority includes all of those chapters there. I won't elaborate on them other than to say that they're all under the purview of this committee. In addition, incidental to our peace officer status, we have authority for 169 and 609, but we only enforce those chapters incidental to our assistance to other agencies. Our budgeted expenditures, as you can see, a great big chunk of that is game and fish. Over 60% of our activity that we do is game and fish enforcement. That basically harkens back to our days as game wardens rather than conservation officers. But as you can see, there's a great deal of additional funding, especially dedicated funding from the Natural Resources Fund. That pretty much takes care of our work in off-highway vehicle, snowmobile enforcement, and that sort of thing. We also have some federal monies there for boat and water enforcement. We have a small amount of general fund. It gets smaller each year. At one time, it was 18% of our budget. It's down to probably under 7% now. But as the commissioner mentioned, that all of our public safety duties are carried out under that funding. Without it, we couldn't respond to the Red River Valley floods. We couldn't respond to the tornadoes, the southeast floods that we had this year. And once again, our assistance to those agencies, to those communities that are affected by these natural disasters, are very important to our mission. And we take great pride in our assistance to the communities, as well as the general public safety of the state. We also provide a lot of assistance to local agencies, federal agencies, and other state agencies when it comes to law enforcement emergencies. Just to highlight some of our activities in public safety and service, we support local police and sheriff. We're another body out there for assistance to those agencies. When they need our specialized equipment, our specialized training for search and rescue, any of those natural disaster issues that come up, we're there. In the Red River Valley floods, without the use of our airboats and some of our other specialized watercraft and the officers that are trained specially to operate those particular watercraft, there would have been a lot more problems in the past than we observed up there. And if you talk to any of the local law enforcement officers up there, you'd understand how grateful they were for our assistance. We also provide assistance to the local and state officers just on a general basis. If there's a burglary or a suspect at large or whatever, if our officers are in the area, we respond just like any other law enforcement officer. In environmental protection, a great majority of that money is also general fund that allows us to do that. And probably one of the number one issues that we deal with there is the Wetlands Conservation Act and protection of the state's wetlands and water quality. Also a big piece of that is invasives enforcement. In the past 2 years, we have increased our invasive species enforcement efforts by almost 300%. And that seems to be a growing concern in the state of Minnesota, and we are picking up the pace as far as our abilities to assist in limiting the spread of those dangerous species that have gotten into our state. Also, other environmental protections such as timber theft, air quality, solid waste disposal, and wildfire enforcement are provided by our officers. Fisheries and game protection, once again, that's the bread and butter of our duties, and quite frankly, we are the face of the department when it comes to the public out there. You ask them if they've ever met an employee of the Department of Natural Resources, more than likely it was a game warden checking their licenses while they were hunting or fishing or boating or snowmobiling or any of that other outdoor recreation. We spend our time patrolling and checking licenses both in the summer and winter. Right now, obviously, we have a year that is abundant with snow, and because of that, our snowmobile activity enforcement activities have picked up considerably. Those are dedicated funds that we certainly can't do with any other of our fundings. We also provide firearm safety training through the Game and Fish Fund. And if you look at incidents of individuals being injured or killed while participating in hunting, you can see that when we instituted these programs of public education, that the numbers started going down and they have continued to drop. We're very proud of our efforts in providing firearm safety. We have also started providing new opportunities for those people with busy lives that are unable to attend the normal classroom variety of firearm safety. We now have an online version of that program to provide for the changing needs of the citizens of Minnesota. Recreational enforcement and safety training, once again, off-road vehicles, snowmobiles, that sort of thing, that's provided, the funding is provided by the Natural Resources Fund and some general fund money in there as well. We also provide $1.8 million per year in pass-through grants to the counties for additional enforcement in both ATV, snowmobile, and boat and water safety. And recreational safety and enforcement, if you look at these graphs, you'll see in the first graph the number of students completing safety training classes. We average about 24,000 in the firearm safety, about 10,000 per year in the snowmobile safety, and about 5,000 for off-highway vehicle safety. Those are very important for keeping the next graph at the levels that they are, and that's recreational fatalities per 100,000 registrations in the state. As you can see, back in the early part of this decade, we had much higher levels than we have now. We strive for zero, obviously, but I think you can see the effects just in the chart of the efforts that our officers put forth in this category. And that completes my presentation. Any questions?
Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much, Colonel, for that great report.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members, as we move to the Division of Fish and Wildlife, Ed Bogus will be presenting that division. He's our now acting Division Director of Fish and Wildlife. So,
Commissioner, if I could, before we do that, we are running close to the time limit here, so... that's our fault. We didn't. This is our first meeting. We probably tried to cram too much into one session. Is it possible at all that we could have you return with the after his report,
Mr. Chair, or we could stop right here? This would be a good place if you're interested. We could just pick it up at Fish and Wildlife when you want to.
I think that'd probably be the thing to do.
Okay,
I think that'd be the thing to do. Out of respect for the time of the committee members and. I want to thank you, and sorry, Ed, we couldn't get you on. I think that the deputy just probably referred to you as being long-winded because you're going to take too long or something. I don't know. I don't know you to be long-winded, but I look forward to the next next one. Members, any other questions or any concerns? Please, if I can, go through the packet that you have. Be ready for the commissioner to give you a call, come knocking on your door, ask some questions. But we'll resume the report probably on Thursday if that works out. No?
Mr. Chair, whenever you're ready, if members could hold on to their packets so they have those,
yeah,
so
those
I don't have to.
Those packets can stay inside of your.
Make those, that'd be great.
Start of your working packets. And I learned the hard way my first year that I kept walking out of here with these committee packets, and they. I ended up with a half a dozen of them before they came in with guns and handcuffs and everything to take them away from me. So be sure if they've got your name on there and they look like they belong here, make sure they stay here so we can have all our information. And, again, but you can take it out of here and read it. But anything that you need left in here, it'll stay here for the next committee. So thank you all for your attention. The first time around, this committee stands adjourned.
Our list.